Okay, so we're going to start out with one of these. Pet beliefs that people kind of think is true, but may or may not be true. And this is a belief that has changed over the years. And when I was young, everybody used to say, life is fair because God is fair. And then one day, I can't remember who it was, but I think it was about 20 years ago, some preacher got up, and it just dawned, a truth dawned on him, and he says, you know, life isn't fair. And when he said that, it just seemed to click in everybody's mind, and everybody, this idea just began to spread like wildfire. And instead of everybody saying life is fair, all of a sudden, over a period of almost months, I started hearing over the radio, TV, and articles I read, everybody started saying life is not fair. So this is one of the few cliches that people have glommed onto that changed over the years. When I was young, life was fair. Then all of a sudden, somebody just introduced the idea. Life is not fair. And when people thought about it, they say, well, you know, I guess, you know, it's kind of right. Life isn't fair. There's people with bad diseases. There's babies that die when they're 6 months old. They don't have a chance to grow up and get married. So life is not fair. But what's interesting is even not only the non-believers say this, but the believers are saying it. Matter of fact, it started out, the first person I heard say this was some preacher. It just dawned on him one day, life is not fair, and he said it, and it caught on like wildfire, and everybody started to believe all of a sudden that life is now not fair. And when you look around, it certainly looks like life is not fair. Like, everybody can't be as good looking as Jason over here. Or as intelligent as Michael over there. So life just doesn't seem to be fair. Now the question is, what is the truth of the matter? Is life fair like they used to believe? Matter of fact, when they used to believe life was fair, they used to say, well, life is fair because even though it doesn't seem fair now, when we die and go to heaven, God's going to make up for all the unfairness. So overall, it's going to be fair. Because if we don't get certain fulfillments here, well, we'll go to heaven and we'll get it there. So God's going to straighten everything out, so it's fair. But then, after this idea of unfairness started to catch on, even the religious people, you know, and looking at life on earth as it is, they concluded, well, you know, life isn't fair. So right now, the religious, the non-religious, the atheists, the agnostics, the preachers, the New Agers, they're all accepting the idea that life is not fair. One of the few things that has actually changed, because most of the cliches that we use today were used 100 years ago. Grass is always greener on the other side of the fence, for instance. Most of the cliches have stayed pretty stable and have stayed in human consciousness for ever, just about, and they don't change very much. But this is one that has changed. So the big question is, what is the truth of the matter? Is life fair or is not life fair? James, what do you think?
Life is fair.
Because life is not fair implies that circumstances are beyond our control and we just have no way of dictating what our future is. But I think that upon deeper reflection, we find out that it really is up to us. We're the creators. We're the ones that can do it. So really, life is fair.
Anybody got any other thoughts on it?
My thoughts are kind of out of the box because I wouldn't be writing if I didn't have something different to say. So my thought on this is this, that we created this movie we call our life, and we created it with all the antagonists. We created it with all of the friends. We created it with everything that we needed to have the spiritual growth that we desired, because that's what we came here for. And so I think it's totally fair, and I think we got exactly what we ordered. But I also believe that when we get down here, we can do some alterations, like you make a movie, I don't want this scene in here. We can do it with absolutely the way we think. We have got so much power in our thoughts. And so we create with our thoughts, I know that. And we created before we came down here, and we're creating right now. So we have to take total responsibility for what we have. We can't blame anyone. That's one of the biggest things I learned to pull myself out of being a victim of all my circumstances, is that we are totally responsible. That's my opinion.
I think when you look at your life, an individual single lifetime, life is not fair. There isn't justice always met. We don't always, karma isn't always completely fulfilled in that lifetime. You know, certain bad things are put upon me maybe by somebody, and I don't see retribution happen to them instantly. But I think when we look at all of our lives as a whole, we'll be able to say everything was totally fair. There's a reason why I went through certain experiences in that particular lifetime, and that was totally fair. Justice was served, and I learned the lessons. But I think the reason that people are inclined to believe, well, if life isn't fair, because they see that it doesn't feel very fair during this lifetime, a single life, but everybody has this, I think, innate desire and understanding that there has to be justice. You know, if there's even a God anywhere, there's got to be some sense of justice out there. So I think people, the logical rationalization is, well, maybe he'll make it all up in heaven. But your next lifetime could be a heaven, but I think it all balances out, and that's where fairness and justice comes into play. And there's a comfort in, I think, understanding the truth of multiple lives or reincarnation, and understanding that eventually justice will be fulfilled. That person that cut me off will eventually have some sort of karma come back to them, you know, or whatever. So
I have a thought. I have a thought about kind of a follow-on thought from that. A lot of the things I thought were grossly unfair when I was a kid, now I look at as inconsequential. And I couldn't imagine the gods of karma worrying about those things. And the only reason they seemed like bummers were because my maturity level was so small at that point, you know. I mean, like when I was 5 years old, if I didn't get a graham cracker I wanted, it was a big crisis. Now it's like, who cares, you know. Anyway, I'm hoping that some of the bigger tragedies in life might turn out the same. As we mature more, we literally learn that these things could happen to Jesus, and they wouldn't knock him off center at all. Anyway.
Okay, any other comments?
Yeah, I think just to echo what Jason said, we make conscious choices or unconscious choices, but we sow seeds of karma. And they are going to grow, and they are going to bear fruit. And they may do it in this lifetime, or they may do it in another lifetime. And I think the more we understand the laws and work with them, the more control we have over our lives. But yes, we do have control by the choices we make, and what we sow, we definitely reap. So ultimately, it is completely fair, and that has to be balanced sooner or later, one way or the other, to move forward.
Okay, good. Anybody else?
That's okay. So I was thinking about this when he asked this, and I thought, well, first of all, the whole concept of fairness requires somebody to judge what's good or what's bad, right? And that whole judgment seems sort of out of line. Who's to say what's good, what's bad, what's better, what's not better than somebody else? So where did the word fairness come up in the first place, or where did that whole line come up in the first place? What originally did it mean? Did it come back with, originally, was fairness something about getting back something from your actions? Or was it comparing yourself or an action or something else to somebody else? So I think that kind of like that word just doesn't even really fit in terms of viewing your life, because then you're going to walk around judging all your actions and judging to see what comes of them in terms of good or bad.
Okay, anybody else?
To that point, I would characterize that as we can choose to be to act or be acted upon. And when we allow ourselves to be acted upon by that driver that cuts us off or something else, we're choosing to define what fair is. And that definition may or may not be accurate. Mm-hmm. To Larry's point, as our maturity increases, we understand more. But I think fairness comes in understanding that we have the ability to act for ourselves and not be acted upon. And in that, we now control our destiny as opposed to being controlled by the things around us.
Okay. And I think we have one more comment. Did you have a comment?
I just think that the seemingly most unfair acts in life or circumstances in life are perhaps our greatest opportunities for growth and expansion, and therefore that makes them not unfair.
Yeah, right. Matter of fact, that's a... Yeah, Larry?
Well, I kind of agreed with the lady over here who was asking the question, what is fairness? And everything I heard everybody say was about people and actions of other people, right? But God created the world and everything that's in it. So I was watching a TV show the other night, and there's like a million wildebeest going across this plain in Africa, and they get to a river, and they have to cross it to live. And when they cross that river, there's hundreds of crocodiles down here, and they're going to eat some of them. They're going to drag them down. They're going to kill them and drown them and eat them. And that's the world God made. There's lions there that will tear things apart, rip them apart to eat. I mean, it seems to me that, like, if you look at most of nature, it's fairly cruel. Fairness is just ever who's the strongest that can eat the other thing. And to a certain extent, that's true in humanity. But we're the only ones that start trying to figure out, you know, making rules about fairness. But I just wonder if fairness, the whole concept, is largely just an illusion of our belief system.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure the sheep that gets eaten by the lion doesn't think life is very fair, right?
Right. Can I make one more point?
Okay.
I've been thinking about the fairness stuff quite a lot in my life. And I, one of the things I really believe in is these maturity levels. Like if someone's working in the astral-emotional level compared to someone who's working in the mental level, they're going to have a different sense of what fairness is, and they're going to have a different sense of, you know, the person operating out of their belly is going to be more me-oriented, and you can expect them to create more problems, and you can expect their life to look more like a soap opera, you know, and with all of the wringing of hands and problems.
And it's not fair.
And I've come to believe that it doesn't bother me quite as much now when I see people working their way through the level they're at. You know?
Yeah. Okay. Okay, we got two different levels of fairness here we've been talking about. There's a fairness that requires a judgment. In other words, if I say, when men are in the locker room, they may say something, call somebody an SOB next to him and say, you don't know what you're talking about. But guys in the locker room can talk quite crudely at each other, and a lot of times they'll look on that as just friendly talk. Then they go home and they'll say the same thing to their wife, so they'll sleep on the couch. So the wife was hurt. The friend in the locker room wasn't hurt at all. He was just having a fun ribbing with each other, you know. So a lot of hurt is interpretation. We are hurt quite often, and we think somebody's being unfair to us because of the way we interpret their actions. But then there's other certain things that are harmful that are pretty universally interpreted as being harmful. If someone murders somebody for their money, well, who in the world thinks that's a good thing to do? Nobody does. Nobody thinks that's a friendly thing to do. Nobody thinks that's a helpful thing to do. Or somebody creates physical harm for somebody or crushes them emotionally, crushes their ego with intent to hurt them. There's certain things that we pretty much universally classify as harm that does create karma. But on the other hand, if a person is harmed through just harmless actions, and he's harmed because he interprets it that way, then that's another matter. Like Jesus, he offended so many people, he said, "Blessed is he who is not offended by me." In other words, so many people were offended by him that finding somebody that wasn't offended was so unusual, he called them blessed, because there were just a handful of people that he didn't offend. Now, people who were offended by Jesus, when he taught such a peaceful message, was it their own fault? Right, it's pretty much their own fault that they were offended. They created their own harm, and Jesus, we're pretty sure, didn't have to undergo a lot of karma, or probably no karma, for offending people just for teaching the truth in a fairly harmless way. But when you teach the truth is very cutting, and people that are not in the truth don't like the truth revealed to them. There's two types of things to consider. There is hurt that is caused not by the person performing the giving act, but by the person receiving, interpreting the giving act as hurtful. And so what can be hurtful to one may not be hurtful to another. Then there's other types of hurts that are pretty much universally recognized. If somebody steals from you, that's something that you consider valuable, that's hurtful, that's going to create karma. The second category creates karma and creates true unfairness within the context of one life. But Jason gives the key here. He points out that there's more than one life. Okay, if we go in the context of 1 year of your life, that isn't a very good parameter of judging the fairness of your life as a whole, is it? Because you might live to be 90 years old. So just 1 year of your life, how fair life was to you in that year, isn't a good parameter to judge how fair your life turned out. But if you could go the whole 90 years, you could find out your life maybe wasn't that unfair. But there was still unfairness. Maybe you had a bad heart that whole life. Maybe you couldn't really go dancing the way you wanted to because you always had to take it easy throughout your whole life. Or maybe you never found the love of your life like your good friend did or something like this. And boy, you just had that big gap. You wanted to find your soulmate, and you lived to be 90 years old, and everything went pretty good, except you never did find that soulmate. Darn. You know, it'd been nice. It's really not fair that my friend found a soulmate and I didn't. Well, looking at just one life in comparison to all the lives that you're going to live is like looking at 1 year in comparison to a whole life. You have to look at the wholeness. When we look at the wholeness, and this is where reincarnation is so important. If there's truly reincarnation, then there's a good possibility that life would be fair. Because maybe you learn a great lesson by not finding a soulmate or a good person to have a relationship in this life. Maybe you learn a lot by being on your own. And then in the next life, you meet somebody and you're more able to be a good companion and appreciate that soulmate in this next life. So that squares it up. So now you feel a lot more fair. This is a feeling I used to have in the church. My first marriage was difficult, and I used to think, man, look at all these guys that say they're really happily married. And I'm with this woman for all eternity, so I'm never going to be happy. I'm eternally sealed gal that thinks I'm crazy, you know. So, so it that just does not seem fair at all to me. But when I discovered reincarnation, I thought, aha, that explains it, you know. I'll eventually things will even out. Eventually I will find somebody that I can get along with. And amazingly, I found somebody in this life. I didn't have to wait for the next life. So things often even out pretty good in one life if we live long enough. So life will be fair if we consider the wholeness. And when you think of these religions today preaching that life is not fair, if you say that life is not fair, then we're really saying that God is not fair. And if God is not fair, you know, how can we have faith in God or in a good end for ourselves? Because if life is really not fair, that could mean that, you know, some of us may actually wind up being in a painful situation for all eternity. Maybe there's some hell to go to or something like that, where we're just going to be miserable for all eternity and others will be happy for all eternity. So if there is not a fairness equation in life, you know, we all should be worried. You know, unless we happen to be one of the lucky ones that gets the beneficial end of the stick, so to speak. Now, I personally believe, and when you look, we talk a lot about soul contact here, and when you look at the innermost part of your being and ask that question, is God fair, and will life be fair in the end? In the end, is everything going to square up so I will have a chance to do everything that I want to do? The core of your being will shout, yes. You can feel that within yourself. If you ask that question to the innermost part of your being, which is connected to every other life in the universe, you can feel that answer, yes. If you don't have a soulmate in this life, sooner or later, it will happen. If you didn't have a feeling of accomplishment in this life, if you felt frustrated with everything that you tried to do, will there come a time that you won't be frustrated, that you will triumph, that you will succeed? The answer is yes. You can feel that within you. If you search, you'll feel that answer resonating within your soul. Yes, every desire of your heart, you will have an opportunity to fulfill. Doesn't that feel like good doctrine? Doesn't that feel good to think about? There's nothing too good to be true, as stated in my books. And it's true, there is nothing too good to be true. Anything that can be imagined and believed can be achieved, says Napoleon Hill, and it's one of my favorite quotes. And that's true. Anything that you can conceive and believe, you can eventually achieve. And if you don't achieve it in this life, if you get hit by a car, die of cancer or something like that, you come back and you do it in the next life. And if you fail in the next life, you'll come back and do it in the next life until finally you do everything that you've ever dreamed of doing. You're completely fulfilled, and then you can enter into the great pralaya, the great rest. And after a great rest, you come back and you try it, and you attempt life in new, brand new circumstances. And so we have what is called eternal lives on eternal worlds without end, that we come back to life again and again in new situations. And because there are so many circumstances in this universe, there's no end to the different circumstances we can find ourselves in. You know, somebody once said, would you rather have, say, $1,000 or I can put this penny on a chessboard, and the first square will put one penny, second square two pennies, third square four pennies, and so on, and we'll double it with each square. Would you rather have $1,000 or these pennies? Well, you know, the person doesn't think about it, wants $1,000. Well, how much do you get if you keep doubling those pennies with each square. Does anybody know?
$1 million.
Yeah, I think it's billions of dollars, really. It's a lot. I don't remember what the number is. But when you think of just the parameters of, what is there, how many squares are on the chessboard? 64? But when you think of all the varieties in this universe, and then in future universes will be built on even higher, more complex principles than this universe, that there is no end to the things that we can get into, the mischief we can get into, the creative endeavors we can get into, the building projects, the relationships we can get into. But the only thing our souls require is a little bit of rest in between. Because after a lifetime, you can imagine, just think of your own lifetime, especially those of us a little bit older. We think one thing good about, you know, dying when the day comes, at least you sense you're going to have a nice little rest. And rest is something that we all need. So even God needs a rest. He created the universe in 6 time periods, and then he had to take a rest. And so a rest is something that all of us need. And we rest between our endeavors. And that's the only thing we require. But when you teach reincarnation to people, they'll often say, well, I don't want to go through life again. This life is about all I can handle. I just want to go live with God, type of thing. And I say, well, you know, when you die and you go to the next world, and you're sitting around for maybe a couple hundred years, don't you think you're going to get bored and want some new challenge? Sooner or later, you're going to want a new challenge. It's just like people who win the lottery. They think, oh, man, I'm just going to go enjoy myself, take vacations, gamble. And pretty soon, they get bored. They get bored. They get so bored, they just squander their money, and then they go back. They have a new challenge forced upon them because they usually wind up losing their money, and then they have to come back and try. So life will eventually be fair, but we have to look at the wholeness of life to see the fairness that's in it.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the New Age Christian Synthesis podcast. If what you heard rang true and you'd like to find out more, please visit J.J. Dewey's website at freeread.com. That's freeread.com.